Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, John Robb. I want to thank you all, however, wherever, and whenever you listen to the show. It is always a pleasure to have you here. We have two outstanding authors today. We're going to be speaking with author Thomas Locke, followed by Joe Clifford. So it's going to give us a nice, unique experience on their different writing styles and what they have going on. Thomas Locke's latest book is Trial Run. Joe Clifford is December Boys. Again, we have announced the winners of the 2015 Best Of, so the authors know who they are. They can announce it any time they like if they want to. You can wait for the December issue to see who is the Crimson Scribe Award winner. Of course, that award goes out to one book only a year, and this year the winner is, you will wait and see on December. So, until then, let's just jump right over to our next guest, and it is Thomas Locke. So, Thomas, thanks so much for coming on. How you doing?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me on, John.
And it just so happens, and let's just say it, Trial Run was one of the best books of 2015 that we named in the thriller suspense category. So it's great to be able to talk to speak with you. It's kind of a daunting process. I'll kind of let you in on a little secret. I mean, it lasts about a month, how we go through, we compile votes from different people, whether it's Facebook, it's our editors, it's our reviewers and everybody, and we kind of put them all in. We don't have publishers submit books. It's just any book that's published. We have to go through and kind of sort all that stuff out. So congratulations on the win. It is much well deserved, I have to say, when you make it this far.
I really do appreciate it. It's such a gift. This whole endeavor, putting the pen name together, starting in this new direction, everything, it's just been so nice to have this validation. 3.5 years of work and now the award. It's just great. Thank you.
Oh, well, you know, again, thank you so much. And let's just jump right into it here. To the award-winning book of 2015 in the Fence category, Trial Run. It is part of your series in the Fault Lines Techno Thriller series. It's book one, came out in August, so it's been out now for about 3 months. Why don't you give everybody a little bit of behind the scenes preview of what they can expect?
Okay. Basically, at its heart, Trial Run asks the same question twice, and that is, what would happen if human consciousness could be separated from the physical body? Now, over the last 4 or 5 years, a huge amount of progress has been made in both mapping the brain and in manipulating brainwave frequencies. And in these trials, in a growing number of cases, the subjects have described being raised out of their bodies. Now, the descriptions are very similar to those of the near-death experiences, and they've become so widespread that within the scientific circles, they now have a name. They're referred to as voluntary out-of-the-body experiences, or OBEs. Now, in my story, this new research takes a huge step forward, and their out-of-body experiences are not only induced at will, but the test subjects maintain conscious control. They go where they want, anywhere, and at any time. And so in Trial Run, there are two teams that have this technology. The first group is made up of scientists who develop the technique and see this as an opportunity to expand mankind's horizons. And then basically they're out to see how far they can go beyond the limits of consciousness and what we as a race can learn. And then the second team stole the technology, and they've got one goal, and that's it, and that is to steal the world's most carefully guarded secrets.
Now, of course, when you know, this book, like you said, had taken some time to kind of get done and kind of get right. I mean, when you're looking at these kind of techno thrillers, and when you're writing these kinds of subject matters, what's one of the one things that, you know, you wanted to make sure that you kind of got across with it? You know, was there some kind of a moral? Was there something underlying within the story that people are going to kind of recognize as they go through the book and read it?
Yeah. Actually, John, there's two questions in there. I think the first one, if you'll allow me to say this, I think the first and most important thing is that what I tried to do in the structure of the story and what took so long was not actually the technology, but what I wanted to do was to return to the sci-fi stories that it was my first love as a kid. And the thing that I liked the most about them, the ones that I was really passionate about, were that the people lived. Unfortunately, with a lot of the techno thrillers and the direction that's been taken in some of the new thrusts in fantasy and science fiction, like urban fantasy, for example, that's a big one for me. The characters have become, in a sense, disassociated from reality, and that just can't happen. The thing that really makes a great story stand out is the fact that you are so gripped by the humanness of the people on the page that you're willing to go with them anywhere they choose to go. And if you're doing a techno thriller or something that's what I would call trial run as near time sci-fi, it's a suspense thriller, but it does move into the same era as like Michael Crichton did with Jurassic Park. And again, the thing that made things like the stories like Jurassic Park or Micro, the ones that, you know, really stood out of his work, was the fact that you saw real people there. So that was the first thing. As far as the you know, the story behind the story, government surveillance has really become a huge issue. And we live a good deal of the year now in England, where my wife teaches and where I serve as writer in residence at one of the colleges over here. And it's estimated that the average person in Great Britain is caught on surveillance camera over 300 times a day. Now, when I started developing this story, I found myself repeatedly coming back to that issue of, where is this surveillance headed? What if there's really nothing that becomes off limits from official scrutiny? What if a new technology like the one in Trial Run grants governments the ability to spy on anything and anyone anywhere in the world? So that is the starting point that I had, and that is the question that the story itself asks.
You know, and that's a very interesting point, because I know a lot of people have always talked about, you know, how many times you're on surveillance in the United States is like the same thing. And as people and citizens of the U.S., we just continue to take it and we don't say anything. And I'm one of those people who are like, I love my privacy. And I do not think that it's right that the government is allowed to kind of do and the spying and everything else. And then they say, well, if you're not doing anything, you have nothing to hide. And I think that that's their way of saying, we can do what we want. If you do what you're supposed to, then, you know, don't worry about what we're, you know, what we're looking at. And I think that that's wrong. And I think that that is, you know, not a very good thing to do to your citizens, to basically say, well, you know what, let me look in your car. If you have nothing to hide, why can't I look at it? And it's like, that's not the point. The point is that there are certain procedures that you have to go through in order to get to that point. So don't drop the, well, if you have nothing to hide, then you shouldn't be able to do it. It's like, I do have nothing to hide, but you still have to follow the law too. And I think that's where the fine line in the gray area comes in, where you as an author can have a lot of fun in that gray area writing these kinds of books.
You're absolutely right, John. You are. Today, I don't know when this is being aired, but as you and I mentioned before,
right now,
we went on air.
Yeah.
Oh, this is live.
Oh, no,
oh, right.
Live.
So,
yeah.
So the issue has never been more pressing than right here at this moment, when France is going through such a terrible tragedy.
Yeah.
And the response in many respects, particularly given the crisis situation that we face in Europe. You and I are speaking with me in England right now, and it's not just this attack in Paris. It's the fact that there have been 2.5 million displaced Syrians that are either moving from Turkey and Lebanon into Europe or are intending to. John Kerry just spoke live from Vienna, where they're negotiating with the Russians over the campaign that they're hoping to put together for Syria, not just military campaign, but also the rebuilding campaign. And one of the issues that they're talking about is this fact that the danger is spreading. And so everything that we say in terms of the surveillance issue has to be balanced against the threat. And for us here in Europe right now, this threat issue is big. There is no ocean that's separating this. And when you see the wave of refugees coming in, one of the big issues that has been raised repeatedly by the national intelligence agencies is that no one knows who is coming in with this wave. And it was just revealed just before I came on air that the Greek government says that one of the bombers that they identified from the Stad, the stadium where President Hollande was watching the game when the bombs went off, he actually went through with the refugees to one of the Greek islands in one of these refugee boats coming off from the coast of Turkey. So, yes, the surveillance issue is being taken to an extreme, but the question is, what is the alternative? And that, as again, going back to the story, that is what I was trying to show. And you're absolutely right. It's not a question of stopping it. It's a question of maintaining a sense of legal boundaries. The definition in law is called rule of law. Rule of law states that the laws of a nation must be applied to everyone equally, regardless of their position within the government or their positions of power in terms of anything, be it money, presence of the intelligence service, whatever. And again, this is going back to what I was trying to reveal in the story, is that what happens with this, the starting point was the consulting group that stole the technology is trying to steal secrets from an enemy. But it turns out, and here again is exactly what you said, it turns out that they use the technology to steal secrets from other opponents inside the American government.
Right, right. I mean, let's face it. I mean, that's the scary thing, is all these hackers and, people that can get into these things and steal identities and credit card numbers. Why can't they go in and steal this information that the government is also collecting and use it for bad things? And that's, again, then that's just another kind of thing that you're able to do in a book and being an author. And when you put these things in, people might say, oh, well, that really can't happen. But how much of the reality in your book Trial Run could actually happen? And, that's an actual scary thought to people reading the book.
Yes. Yes, that's everything that I did, both in terms of technology and this question of surveillance, is trying to go from reality, one step beyond reality, but holding on to this concept of the next thing. When I was growing up, that was one of the great elements of the, science fiction of the day, Arthur C. Clarke, Robert Heinlein, was trying to look around the bend of time. And both in terms of the technology and in terms of the moral crisis, that's what I was trying to go back to here, was where are we headed? And again, it all comes back to the people. If you can make the people on the story live and breathe, if there's a sense of bonding with them at a core level, then where they take you is this sense of watching reality unfold into the future.
Well, let's kind of get into to know exactly, when you say book one, of course, you know, there's going to be a series. Do you have a set period of how long you think the Fault Line series is going to go, or is this just going to kind of be going until you think that it's a right time to end it?
I have to tell you, I have just finished the manuscript of the second book, which is called John, they changed the title on me, and now I can't remember what they changed it to. Flashpoint. Sorry. But let me tell you, when you get into the publishing game, that's one of the things they do. The salespeople in marketing, they treat the title as their baby, and you can't, as an author, you can't argue that much, because, you know, they have to go out and sell it. So if they claim it, it's like, oh yeah, that's a great title, and you just sort of grin and bear it. So in finishing it, I've been asking myself that same question. Trial Run hit one of the bestseller lists, mystery and suspense bestseller list, in September, and the question is, how far can I take this? Because there are a lot of questions that are just, I mean, if we are able to separate human consciousness from the physical form, how far can we go? And that question, when I started sketching on book three, they want me to do at least three books. There's this question of, how far can I go? And I honestly, there's that scary moment of like, wow, really, this is a Pandora's box. I mean, the answer is, I can go a really long way.
That's true. I mean, when you start getting into, I mean, the things are endless at times. I mean, when you have these kinds of storylines.
Yeah, it's and it's never been done before, which also it's like, uh-oh, there's no one else's trail that I'm following here, which again is that sense of like, okay, have I just walked over the cliff's edge? I'm not sure yet. Let's talk again in a year, and, you know, when I've gotten a little further into sketching out book three, and I'll let you know whether I feel comfortable with going beyond the three books or not.
Well, now, let's kind of jump over here, because you write another series, and I'm a huge fantasy fan. I love fantasy. I'm not really big into major science fiction, I guess, you know, setting things on Mars and stuff like that. But I love fantasy, and I know that we received a copy of your latest book, Merchant of Alice, or Alice, A-L-Y-S-S. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Alas, maybe, Alas. But it's the second in your Legends of the Realm series. Can you give us a little background to that? Because I know that this next book is going to be coming out soon.
Yes. Okay, this is a little difficult for me to talk about, John. I have not prepared to talk about. It's called The Merchant of Alice, and it is it's really hard for me. The first time I talk about a new story, it took me 500 pages to tell the story, and sort of distilling it down to radio-sized sound bites is quite difficult.
How about we kind of go, give us an idea of what a mercenary was and kind of the Legends of the Realm. So when people, because this is only book two, so if people want to kind of jump into the first series, what, I guess, is Legends of the Realm, and what kind of fantasy series is it, instead of maybe just talking specifically about the newest book?
That's great. That's great. Thank you. I basically, when I started working on this project, one of the crucial elements to me was this feeling of, like I said, wanting to go back to something that is basically related to the foundations of fantasy that I loved as a kid. And these are both the Greek fantasies, the originals, where the whole structure of story as we know it was founded upon fantasy. And the reason why Plato, Aristotle, Euripides started with this whole fantasy concept was this idea of taking the average guy and putting him in impossible circumstances and showing how these huge events if the person remained internally strong, whatever, was able to grow into something that could be called heroic, or the wounded hero, someone who isn't perfect by any means, but someone who is able to triumph. And really, the big question of most of these stories was, despite the fact that they were flawed people just like you and me, could they grow beyond themselves to sort of rise up to whatever the situation called for? And some of the, you know, some of the best of these were stories where they failed. But the whole concept is based on this classical struggle of good versus evil. And that's what I tried to return to in Emissary. I have to say it did really well. It was a national bestseller, and the film rights have been sold to a group in England that are taking this. So obviously there are other people that feel that this works really well also. And mm-hmm. Merchant of Elis is the second in the series.
Now, I have to say that, of course, the main thing, you don't have a British accent. So are you transplanted over from the United States to Britain?
Well, originally we came over, this was back in the early 90s, we came over because my wife wanted to do her doctorate over here, and she promised that we were going to be here for 3 years, and that was,
that was
22
years. Yeah, I know how that was.
But it's really become a home for us both. I'm writer in residence at one of the colleges at Oxford University now. I lecture in the creative writing process, and we have become involved in the society over here. I love it. I hate to say she was right and I was wrong. I shouldn't have complained in the first place, but it's been a real growing experience. And when I was working on this first of the fantasies, obviously our college is adjacent to the pub where the Inklings used to gather, Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, that group. And that, again, being connected to this group effectively who were trying to build the same sort of structure in the chaos after World War II, has really meant a great deal for me as well.
Now, do you think, okay, so, I mean, do you see some influences from living over in the UK into your writing? Because, you know, British writing, American writing, you know, it's much different. I mean, you can see it in the books, you can see the words and things like that. So did you have some of those influences, or did you kind of work on, you know, is it still more of an Americanized style writing that you kind of grew up with, that you kind of read, and that you kind of worked on more?
That's a beautiful question. And the answer is, really, it depends on the book. The Emissary and Trial Run have both been very powerfully received over here in Europe. A number of the books that I did previous to that, I don't feel like they did. And it is, you're absolutely right, it is a very different writing style and a very different mentality. But obviously, going into any new story, I hope the reach is going to be as wide as possible. But for the first time, it looks like I have two ongoing series where this is actually happening, and it's a great thing. It really is. It's been a long time coming, but it is really nice that it's happened.
Yeah, and it's going to be difficult sometimes to juggle the two when you do have two ongoing series, and they are so contrast in the differences and what you're trying to talk about and what you're trying to do.
Actually, you know, I find the cross-pollination really helps. Moving from one to the other, it's like I'm using two different sides of the brain. I really have liked being able to step back from one. It's such an intense process, and go to the other. As I said, I've just finished the sequel to Trial Run, and I'm now next month going to be starting on book three in the in the fantasy series, and I am so looking forward to it, John. I really am. Moving from one to the other is just fabulous.
Then that's good, and it kind of keeps you fresh. It keeps you challenged. because, you know, that's something that you have to kind of challenge yourself with.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. It's something, you know, it's the first time I've ever been involved in writing two different series simultaneously. I've had other series that have come out, but this is a first. And being able to go back and forth between them rather than write, you know, that sort of constancy of just the one, quite frankly, I don't see how someone like Lee Child can do that book after book with the same character. How does he keep it fresh? I just don't see it. I mean, he's got, what, 7 in the series now? 8? And I just started reading his last one, and it's fabulous. And I just, without having something else that he's writing in between, I wonder about that. I admire
his Reacher,
him for it.
His Reacher series is into the 20s.
Oh, my gosh, is it really? Wow.
Yeah, I think he's like book 22, 23 now. I mean, him, Janet Ivanovich, and, you know, James Patterson, I mean, they're the ones that have written, you know, the biggest series. Their series, you know, have been going on for quite some time. But, yeah.
Patterson, he's very different. He does write 3 or 4 different types of series. You know, he alternates back and forth. That,
he
to
does.
Me, is now that I've gotten in this process of writing a book that looks like it's got a strong following and or two different series, I can see where he comes from on that. It does keep me fresh. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think that's cool. So, well, we got about a minute or so left in the interview. We've kind of, you know, jumped right through this. I want to kind of give you the last word and let everybody kind of know where they can reach you, your Facebook or your Twitter handle or, you know, website, anything that you want to let anybody know, maybe what's coming up after Trial Run. I'll give you, like, the last word here to kind of get all that out.
Okay, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, all of that, thomaslock.com, tlock.com, davisbunn.com. But I really, the biggest thing I'd like to say is thanks for that Best Book Award.
You're welcome.
It was such a gift. It really was. Coming at this point, you know, really early in the process for this new series, it was just, you cannot imagine the thrill. I am just so grateful for that, and thank you.
And you're very welcome. And again, much earned because it is. I mean, there's a lot of competition, and I don't think a lot of people really understand. You know, some people when they get an award, and it's like, oh, you know, that's nice. But I don't think that they get, because again, publishers do not submit their books to us for this award. This comes from our reviewers, from our fans, from readers, and they all, you know, every book that's been published in 2015 is up for this. And that's how we do it. And so, you know, there is no, like, Academy. I think a lot of people don't understand, like, the Academy Awards. Those movies are submitted to the Academy. They don't go out and just buy movies. Those movies are submitted to them for this award. And then they pick from those submissions that they get in. They don't go search out like we do. So it's a little different process that we do. And so hopefully, you know, we like to do that. And that gives you that little extra, you know, bit of a jolt to be like, hey, let's keep it rolling. Let's keep writing.
That's exactly what it's done. It really has. I don't know what else to say except thank you. And to your readers and reviewers also, it's just meant the world.
Well, we want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to have you. And,
likewise.
You know, keep us up to date on what's going on in the next book. You know, we'd love to know what's going on in the next one.
Okay. All the very best to you.
All right. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
So, again, everybody, that is author Thomas Locke, and his book is called Trial Run. It is the first in his series that is new right now, and it is called the Fault Line series. Go to tlocke.com for more information on that book and his other series, which he just has another book. It's Legends of the Realm. It's a little more fantasy. So you get a kind of techno thriller. You get kind of a little different taste here with Thomas Locke. And again, Trial Run, re-rated as one of the best books of 2015 in the thriller suspense category. That is the largest category of books that we have. And so for him to make it into that one, I mean, you know, he was with the likes of Lee Child and others that made the list this year. And you can see all that in the December issue. We asked them all 3 questions, and most everybody has gotten back to us. There's been a couple that we haven't been able to reach. And you know, we ask them three questions, and we kind of, you know, give them a little bit of taste of what's going on, and we want them to kind of respond back, and it's a little fun and kind of lighthearted. The Crimson Scribe Award winner this year is a woman, so Terry Hayes will, from I Am Pilgrim, will give up his award, will give up his throne for this year to the next author. You know, we've had Tess Gerritsen and MJ Rose in the past, and last year was Terry Hayes with I Am Pilgrim, and this year is going to be another fantastic author that we've had for quite some time, and this latest book is wonderful by her, so we're going to check that out. We're waiting on Joe Clifford to come on. Hopefully we get this. There was a change at his publisher, and I don't know if things kind of got messed up as far as whether or not he's going to come on since the publicist is no longer there, but we'll give him some time. In the meantime, we want to let you know about a couple things. DarkRenaissanceBooks.com is a place to go to find out some great books if you're looking in that kind of a realm. It's a little bit more on the, you know, a little bit more on the horror suspense kind of side. Really fantastic books from Dark Renaissance, so go check them out and see what they have going on. KensingtonBooks.com, of course, we've been talking about Kensington for such a long time because they do have such fantastic authors, and they put out very, very quality products in their books. And, you know, Lisa Jackson, of course, Kevin O'Brien, one of my favorite writers, he's with Kensington. And so make sure that you check out what they got going on at KensingtonBooks.com. And Kevin Hurley, with his latest book, Cut and Cover, is out. So you want to make sure you visit silkreels.com. You can check out Kevin Hurley, Cut and Cover. He's another fantastic author. L.J. Sellers is going to have a new book coming out. There's going to be a lot coming here in the wintertime. I know that Patricia Cornwell, and she's still doing the Scarpetta series, like we were just talking about, you know, Lee Child. And I think Patricia Cornwell's up to, like, book 22, 23. And the Scarpetta series, and her latest book is out now also. But yeah, there's going to be some wonderful books. Of course, they come in the fall, and then they're going to hit again here right after the new year. And, you know, I always check, you know, of course, we get 10,000 books a year, but I always check Amazon just to see exactly what we got coming out too, because the new releases, because I just can't get them all. You know, there's just so many of them. So, we check out Amazon.com, and we check that new release section, see what's happening, and try to get some authors to you that you might not have heard of, and some that you have heard of, and you just haven't been able to speak to. I know we got Lisa Gardner coming up on the radio show. We always have Lisa around January, February, because that's kind of her month for her newest book, and, you know, Lisa's always been a great friend to us, and it's always great to have her on. I know Alan Jacobson is going to be on the show here in a couple of weeks. We love having Alan on. We could talk for days with Alan. You know, he's a wonderful guy, wonderful author, and it's great to see him continue to climb up the ranks on that. So it looks like, you know, Joe's probably not going to make it on. We'll try to see if we can get him on at a later time. But again, this happens sometimes. Like I said, his publisher had some turnover, so things might have got crossed up, and he might not have known, you know, maybe what's going on or things like that. So, I will go ahead and end the show now. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep talking, and I don't think you really want to hear that. I do that enough. And we're going to have a show tomorrow. Simon Torin, I get to talk to tomorrow, a great friend of ours, for another one from England. He's going to be on tomorrow's show on One-on-One. And, of course, we have Beyond the Cover, where Jeff had to do a couple interviews on his own with Robert Crace and Craig Johnston. So we got some powerhouse interviews that we're going to be playing here, Beyond the Cover, coming up here on Monday with Jeff Ayers and I on that show. We're able to get some fantastic authors. Michael Conley is going to be coming up on that, on the show, early next year. So we're going to have some fantastic guests coming straight to you. So make sure you check out that, Beyond the Cover. You can just go to iTunes, download the podcast, just subscribe, and then we're done. It just goes right into your podcast. If you don't like it, delete it. If you don't like the episode that we're doing, or you don't want to hear it, you can just pass it up. No big deals. We try to give you everything. Crime and Science Radio has got some great interviews that they have coming up. Of course, you can get yourself immersed in their guests because, man, I'll tell you, some of the stuff they do in-depth there is just fascinating, and the guests that they get on and to able to hear, you know, what it's really like with CSI crime labs and forensics and all that stuff that you think is real and it's not real in real life, and they give you the straight story there. So check out CrimeAndScienceRadio.com. And then, of course, The Story Blender, hosted by Stephen James and now Susan May Warren. You can go to thestoryblender.com to see what they got coming on. Another great way for you to, if you're authors or just people looking at stories, it's, you know, the tagline, of course, is this is where great storytellers talk about great storytelling and kind of how they craft books, kind of how they do their thing. And whether it's, you know, music or whether it's books or whether it's art or movies or whatever, you know, there's stories to tell in so many different things. And they do an outstanding job of bringing you those kind of guests. Fascinating to kind of hear how they do their stuff. So you can go to storyblender.com for more information there. But in the meantime, we want to thank you all, of course, for listening. It's been fascinating. We want to thank Thomas Locke for coming on. We will see you all tomorrow. And until next time, everybody, like we always like to say, keep reading.